Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition, a Swift Bias.
Manton Reese, we are an extremely controversial, provocative type of show. We like to shoot straight from the hip without regard for whose feelings we might hurt, what kind of animosity we might engender among our listeners. We're basically pretty much the rude bad boys of podcasting. we're pretty much hardcore, take it or leave it, unbalanced, unmeasured. We lay down the law, we say what's truth, and other people who defy us, well, they can go find another podcast as far as we're concerned.
Wow. I didn't know it was that extreme, but we did get some feedback on last week's show about Swift, and I think that is a kind of polarizing topic among the community, as you can expect. Brand new thing, and just Apple just dropped it in the middle of the community like a bomb, and just, you know, everyone's reacting in different ways.
What I like, Manton, is that it seems to me at least that some of the outrage is that we suggested that Swift might divide the community in some way. And wouldn't you know it, some people have written in to strongly support our points of view, and some people have written in with bombastic, unhinged criticisms of our inability to see the future and the holy righteousness that Swift represents. So I guess they've pretty much proved us wrong that the community could be divided over a programming language.
Right. And there's good, you know, there's good points about the language itself that people keep bringing up. And I'd like to maybe on a future show talk about the language itself. But this week, I think you're right. It's interesting to think about the effect on the community. And you had thrown that out last week, and I hadn't really thought about it that much. The fact that, you know, over the next few years, some of us are going to be using one language and some of us another, and new programmers, they might be great, like iOS or Mac developers, will have very different experience and skill set, potentially. I mean, the frameworks are the same, but the language is very different.
Yeah, well, the frameworks are the same for now, and that's one of the big questions, too, is will to the extent that, you know, there starts to be a bias towards one framework or the other, then some people will feel even more left out. Let's face it. I mean, either the frameworks will start to show a bias towards Swift, or there's no hope for Swift in the long term. Maybe that's too much. But, you know, Apple has certainly presented the language so far as a natural successor to Objective-C. Right? They're not presenting it as, let's just have this happy, you use Objective-C for this kind of thing and you use Swift for this kind of thing from here on out. And if that were the way it were being presented, then, you know, there wouldn't be like dual code examples in every API documentation entry.
Right.
The idea is clearly that Swift, it's twofold. There's for one thing, they're certainly not indicating that like Objective-C is on the way out anytime soon, but they are painting a picture in which, from Apple's point of view, every single Mac and iOS developer should learn Swift. And they should embrace it and start to use it in projects where it makes sense to use it, right? And it's designed in such a way that, at least once you get past some of the like learning curve stuff we talked about, like the changes in you know, some features like dynamic dispatch, stuff like that. Once you get past that, I think the idea is you should be comfortable developing Cocoa apps for Mac and iOS, and therefore, going down, you know, down the road, you would not be inclined to use Objective-C in most scenarios. And that makes sense then that frameworks down the road will have a bias towards Swift, right? I mean, like I said, either that or at some point down the road, and this would be terrible for Apple and terrible for the development community, even if it were to happen in the short term, even if it were to happen next month, for instance, Apple says, whoops, Swift, wrong idea, backing out of that. You're right. We listen to Core Intuition. We don't want to divide the community. Those guys get it right every darn time. And even if that happened next month, which would be relatively early in the investment, it would be terrible, terrible, like lack of, you know, it would be embarrassing. Let's put it that way. It would be embarrassing, and already thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, I don't know, of developers have started using some of their time learning Swift.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Apple's not going to do that. But there are people who think they should, really. I mean, like this, Tim Burks filed a bug and he put it on open radar so everyone can see it, and we'll link to it. And the title is very clear, Kill Swift, Fix Xcode. And it's very quick bug report saying kind of along the lines of some of the stuff we said last week, but much more extreme. You know, it's a major distraction, kill it. It's done. You know, you shouldn't have done this to begin with.
Yeah, and he's Tim Burks, for those who don't know. He runs the Renaissance Conference out in San Francisco Bay Area. And he runs a pretty well-known mobile developer meetup out there. He was a speaker at the C4 conference years ago.
Where he introduced a yes. new programming language.
A new right? programming language, right. Yeah. He's gone down the path of trying to develop a programming language from scratch that would appeal to Cocoa developers. This guy has some insights. And he just basically says, I think the nut of his report was, and this is clearly up for debate, but the nut of his criticism was, I think, where he said the appropriate way to introduce a new language is for its creators to spend several months writing non-trivial applications in the language and reviewing the results with experts. This does not seem to have been done. And I would probably tend to agree with that assessment, given that from what we've heard, very few people within Apple knew about the language. It sounds like the kind of thing he's suggesting is, for example, maybe Xcode and one of the iWork apps or something should have been ported to Swift. Hmm. And that having had that experience of a non-trivial application developed in the language, that a lot of the – I guess what his criticism there, I think, is that we're being forced to guinea pig features of the language that could have just as easily been sort of – tested in-house.
Right. And correct me if my memory is wrong, but when he introduced his new language, he built the language, and in the same talk, he had like an app in mind, I think, that he, it wasn't just a language. It was like, I built this so I could build this other app, and let me show it to you. It's really cool. So I think, you know, Apple obviously – you know, what he's saying is should do the same thing. Real apps behind it, not just, like you said last week, an academic kind of, you know, in theory, this is the great language we want, but actually real world, let's build some apps with it and see what breaks.
Yep. So getting back to what we were both saying, Manton, I don't think there is I think there is a very, very slim chance that Apple would reverse course on this.
Yeah.
Even with a smart guy like Tim suggesting it so bluntly. But what I love about his bug report, though, is that it gives permission to, I don't know, permission might not be the right word, but let's face it, like when you're sort of like feeling out how you feel about something new, sometimes you don't even kind of know enough about it to know what the boundaries of the debate should be. And I think like from my point of view, I wasn't thinking, there was never really, and this sort of gets back to our negative feedback from last week, because I, for one, anyway, Manton, never meant to suggest last week that Swift is a bad language or that people who are embracing it are fools or that I would never embrace it or that its features are meaningless compared to Objective-C or that even some of the things I said it doesn't seem to have that Objective-C does have. I wasn't suggesting that I knew with confidence that they were impossible to do in Swift. I was, however, and I stand by this, I was trying to take like an observational point that, oh, it will have this side effect, it will have this consequence. I don't really want the developer community to be divided over it, but I think this kind of debate, as early as it can be done, the kind of debate that Tim Burks is helping to cause, you know, giving people, in a sense, the idea that it's okay to point out the bad sides to this stuff. It's kind of like the old reality distortion field thing from keynotes, right? Like you get the news and you're like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing ever. And then somebody's like, oh, what if maps doesn't actually get you from point A to point B? And it's like, like I'm sure in that announcement when Apple announced the map support, I'm sure I was like, yeah, down with Google Maps. This is it. You know, eat it, Google. You're going down. Apple came to town. And you know what happens when Apple comes to town? Everybody cries. And then Google's like, Yeah, we have the best maps. And sure enough, 1 week later, I'm using Google Maps, the app on my phone, and Apple's Maps is collecting dust. But it's this is the good thing about time, is we get perspective on the things Apple has announced. We get to digest what it means in the long term, and we get to speculate. Yes, some of it is pure speculation, but we get to speculate about how it will change the community. And the fact of the matter is, I think I was right, and to the extent that you were saying similar things, Manton, you were right that this is it's going to have consequences, and that doesn't mean that that's bad. And it doesn't, because here's what I don't like. I'm ranting here a little bit. Sorry, I'll give up the mic for a second in a minute. But here's what I don't like. I don't like it when I say introducing a new programming language like this, where the old language is still necessary and has lots of viability in it, and the new language is immature, is going to cause a rift in the development community, and we're all not going to be working on the same thing, period. Like, we're not going to all have the same focus of what our development environment is, period. And responses like, well, how else are they going to introduce a new programming language? Like, I don't know any of the 100 million other ways that they could have done it. You know, that doesn't get to the point that it's like, you know, it's still I don't have to solve the problems in order to observe that there is at least a problem.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean, when you observe a problem, it doesn't mean that you condemn all of the causes of the problem. You know, it's like population growth, let's say. You know, I don't condemn everybody having a baby, you know, but it doesn't mean I ignore the fact that population growth is a challenge to contend with. I pulled that metaphor out of thin air, but anyway, Manton, tell me what you think.
there's so many ways that Apple could have approached this, and maybe we'll look back on this being the best way. Something just completely new, a new shift, and 5 years from now, we're going to be using Swift, and we're going to be glad that Apple just made this kind of what seems very drastic change. Instead of doing, I mean, one of the ways they could have approached this, obviously, I think I said this last week, and it was in Apple's slides, right? Their pitch at the beginning was Objective-C without the C. They could have done that. I mean, I think lots of people make the argument that maybe you could only evolve Objective-C so far. But Objective-C has evolved very nicely over the last several years, and I could see it going to 3.0, 4.0, and it's baby steps, but several years from now, you realize that it's kind of the same language, but the C part is gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think they could have done it like that, but I don't know. People make the argument that no, maybe a big change is what's needed. But it's, you know, has consequences. And like you said, I don't think we're criticizing the language that much, although there are things I can nitpick about the language that kind of bug me. Overall, I really love Swift. There's so many really nice things in it. And when I sit down and actually kind of use it full time, you know, quote unquote, I'm sure I'll love even more about it. But you said something a minute ago too that I want to touch on, which is you said like future APIs might have like a Swift bias. And I was thinking back, I mentioned this before, I was thinking back on the only other time I can think of a major transition like this happening, which is when Mac OS X actually came out and we had the Carbon versus Cocoa kind of thing. And in a lot of ways, Mac OS X, people like to talk about, especially old next guys, I love all y'all, but there's also often the argument that Mac OS X is just next step, you know, kind of moved forward. And I've always thought that's not right. It's this beautiful mix of classic Mac, next step, and like brand new stuff, right, that didn't exist at all next. And you need all of that for Mac OS X to be successful. But as we were going through that transition, it was kind of easy to say, you know, that Mac OS X had this Objective-C bias, you know, this Cocoa bias, even though most of the developers on the platform were Carbon developers, right? I mean, if you look at every company that was shipping commercial apps, no one was writing a Cocoa. And it still kind of worked out. It was rough a little bit, but a couple years passed and it kind of worked out. And I kind of wonder if maybe the same thing will happen with Swift, but even like accelerated, because people are so excited and embracing the new stuff. Maybe it'll just kind of accelerate that process. And the point that we get to having that bias of things being in Swift by default will happen fairly quickly.
Yeah. I wonder, though, if the challenge with Swift succeeding Objective-C is that it doesn't so fundamentally change the kinds of programming techniques you can use.
Right.
And I know, yes, there are all these new things you can do with Swift, but I mean, the difference between Objective-C, the Cocoa APIs, and Carbon was all of, you know, there anything object oriented at all. Introductions of all new, all that, you know, dynamic dispatch stuff we were talking about was all new. It's like,
well, the frameworks are completely different.
The frameworks are completely different.
That was the major thing.
Yes. And right. So there wasn't actually a bridging of, you didn't have a situation where it was like, oh, don't worry, all the old Carbon apps can still call through to, they could call through to the Cocoa stuff. It's just they had to use Objective-C to do it, or, you know, I guess write their own Objective-C message send stuff. But I don't know. It was a far greater rift in that sense. It was, mm-hmm. I think in a way that's what makes me more kind of cautious about this, is because the two options now leave a lot more room for independent personality choice of platform. Like, it leaves, so some people who use Swift are going to be saying, there's no way in hell I could ever use Objective-C to do this. There's going to be some people who, the way that they were brought up programming and the way things that they've come to depend upon when developing software are all the things that Swift provides them. And then there's going to be a bunch of people who are so comfortable with the mechanisms of Objective-C and who don't see the value of the new Swift features, who are going to be just as happy moving right along. You know, I think you've touched on this before, Matt, and I've always appreciated it. It's like, you can write software with just about any language, you know, and the fact that you're going to have, at least for the foreseeable future, access to all of the frameworks from Objective-C and from more or less all of the frameworks from Swift, it's going to be down to what's your culture and what is your attitude and what do you prioritize? What's your style? Mm-hmm. Are you sort of like allegiant to a C style of programming? Are you, and it's not going to be, and it's, what's even weirder is it's going to come down almost to, like, for a lot of developers, it's going to come down to, what does your manager say you should program it in? And
yeah.
That's weird. You know, it's going to be a little weird. Some people are going to be out there saying, well, I got this great new Cocoa job at a company I really love, but the problem is they insist on sticking with Objective-C. And you know what? That company might be cranking out software that beats the pants off of every Swift app out there. That's the fact of the matter. There's going to be, I think that is the scenario I see that most strongly convinces me there's going to be this rift. And look, we don't have to dwell on it forever. And I know I'm not helping in that respect, but that's all I'm saying is that there is going to be that rift, and we can put aside judging it to, you know, because some people are going to write in and say, well, just because there's going to be a rift doesn't mean it's the end of the platform, or it's not going to be.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I agree. It's not the end of the platform. It's just a change from what we've enjoyed for the past, you know, 15 years almost now.
Yeah. And like you said, you can program in anything. The question is the tool you're using, are you fighting the framework and fighting the OS? And like, going back to Carbon and Cocoa, you could kind of mix and match them a little bit, but it took a couple versions of macOS 10 before you could even do that. At some point, it became that you were fighting the frameworks to use the quote-unquote wrong programming language.
Right.
And I don't think we're going to have that with this anytime soon. Like, there's no versus it trying to write iOS apps with PHP or something, right? You're creating work for yourself that's
yep.
just totally pointless. With this, we don't have that, because the frameworks are basically the same. You don't feel like you're fighting it as much. You might be fighting just learning a new language. Like, I sat down the other day and I was writing some, it was Sunday afternoon. I had a little block of time to code on a project, and I got into one of those grooves where just, you know, code's flying off your fingers and you feel like you're productive. And I thought for a second, I just kind of reflected that I know Objective-C fairly well. And it was like, I like this language. I've really fallen in love with it over the years, and I'm very productive in it. And I think a lot of developers, and maybe you said even companies, kind of will have that opinion for the next little while. It's like, we're good at this. We're going to continue down this path, and then just every year kind of reevaluate what makes sense.
Yeah. You know, the funny comparison comes to mind is there's this joke about, like, you know, amateur photographers see a beautiful photograph and they ask the photographer, oh my God, that's an amazing photograph. I need to know what kind of camera you used to take it. And the sort of idea there is, oh, it's this naive attitude that the tool is necessarily the key component to any expertly crafted thing. And I think the same thing is going to be true for Swift and for Objective-C. You're going to have this situation where these master Objective-C craftspeople continue to churn out amazing stuff. And meanwhile, some, like, you know, people who have been, you know, more used to different programming languages will be saying, that's impossible to do great apps with Objective-C. And they'll be, you know, trying to use Swift. But the fact is, Manton, you are a craftsperson who has mastered the tool of Objective-C. And today, anyway, you can't make a great app in Swift. Like, sorry, Manton, you're not prepared.
It's very true. I do not take offense at that. It's true. I'm at least twice as slow in Swift as anything else.
Anyway, we probably shouldn't dwell on it. You know, one thing I would like to point out that happened, I think, within the last week, and also lends credibility to the idea that Apple sees Swift as a successor to Objective-C, is they have, as you know, Manton, a newly announced official Swift blog.
Yes, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's very awesome. And I'm not even going to light a lighter for the absence of an official Objective-C blog. But it says something, you know, doesn't it? I mean, granted, part of this is just, okay, well, look, we know a lot of people are talking about Swift and we want to keep in touch with and keep Apple's attitude about it in the public. And that's great. That's a change for Apple. They're not really great at doing that in general or historically in recent years. So the Swift blog is great. But I would just like to point out there is one programming language for Cocoa that is represented with an official company blog, and it's Swift.
Yeah, that is fascinating. I think it's great that there's a blog. I don't even care what. If they had launched a Maps blog, I'd be excited. With Swift, it's particularly interesting because, it serves a couple purposes, like what you said, also just selling other people who aren't convinced. But one thing I kind of wish, so the URL is, you know, developer.apple.com/swift/blog, I think. And my first thought was, I kind of wish it was /blog/Swift because I want there to be a lot of blogs. I want there to be /blog/whatever, not just Objective-C, but Xcode and Maps for, you know, whatever, iPhone, you know, any, I would love to see this be the first of several blogs or many blogs from Apple. Maybe that is asking for way too much, but I don't know. It's a new Apple. They're doing things differently.
Oh, I did know when I was like, remarking about this on Twitter, that it's kind of seemed like great news that Apple finally had a blog, and you know they've had these like weird little one-off posts from Steve Jobs in the past, but really not a blog by any measure of the word. This one I thought looked the most like a real blog. RSS feed. I don't think it's made with anything like even semi-standard like WordPress or anything like that. But
that's why Apple hasn't been blogging. They had to write their
write their own blog system. But then, some folks pointed out, including Cable Sasser from Panic, pointed out that Apple had this Mobile Me downtime blog, like years ago when Mobile Me, I guess, was experiencing a particularly rough time. Okay. And then also Robert Anderson, who's currently the Square lead designer, he pointed out he was the designer of that, Apple's first blog. He says, I designed for Apple's first blog. And it was only up for 3 days because it was like blogging at gunpoint by Steve Jobs, like upset with the Mobile Me team. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to go back and look at it. I think you have to go to archive.org. I'll dig up the link. But it's like, I have been asked by Steve Jobs to update everybody.
Really?
Every day or two about the status of Mobile Me. And it's like basically like I will not, you know, it's like writing on the chalkboard 1,000 times. Like, I will not write inferior web services for customers, you know.
When the blog goes away, you'll know I've been fired.
Well, and I think that's the thing is there were only three posts. And it was like every 2 days on the nose for 6 days. And I guess then, I'll have to look up the history of this, but I guess then MobileMe came back up or whatever. And Steve Jobs was like, all right, you're out of the penalty box. Like,
well, it would have been cool to keep that blog going and talk about other stuff. But here's the funny part so far. That blog that was only up for three posts and is gone now from the internet still has three times as many posts as the Swift blog. So it says something about Apple's, you know, I expect many more posts for a, but you know, the Apple has had a couple sort of unofficial, not, you know, like, Safari when it was getting started.
Oh, it still has that too. I think the Surf and Safari, but I think that's a good example actually, because that was a very substantial blog.
Yeah. This is the first, the actually official at apple.com. And yeah, I'd love to see more.
Right. The Surf and Safari blog is on webkit.org. And so it's kind of funny, actually, that they were able to use the Safari trademark in that. But that just goes to show kind of how funny the relationship between Safari and WebKit is. It's like this open source project that has tons of influence from the Safari team and from Apple. But yeah, that was a good example of actually something that really helped a lot. And if you could, Surf and Safari makes a good template, I think, for the kinds of blogs that many, many, many projects at Apple, even non-open source ones, could have. Because a lot of it's just like pointing out how great the product is. It's like, hey, this, you know, the inspector has this awesome new feature. You know, we increased performance by 10 times, Google. you know, stuff like that. But anyway, Manton, suffice to say that I don't think we've done anything to quell the outrage over our imbalanced opinions about Swift. So brace your inboxes. Watch out, Manton. Watch out on Twitter today, because you're going to be getting a lot of responses, and you're going to have a pretty busy day on Twitter.
When I check it every 2 days.
All right, we are very happy to have back as sponsors of the show this week, Crashlytics. Crashlytics, as you no doubt know, is a crash reporting framework for iOS, Mac, and Android. You download their framework, you pop it into your project, you know, most pertinent to us, into Xcode, and you just link it up with your project, ship your app, and the next time any of your users runs into a crash, it's automatically updated. All the details about the crash, you get statistics about what operating system version they're running, how many times the same crash has been encountered, whether it's the same user or whether it's multiple different users who are being affected. All of this great information comes simply by signing up for this free service, downloading the framework, popping it into your build process, and then all you got to do really is kick back and wait for the emails notifying you that something has happened. It's a great way to stay tuned in to what's going on with your app while it's out there in the wild. We all, you know, try to write great apps that don't have any crashes, and of course, when we test them ourselves, often they don't seem to have any problems, but leave it to hundreds or thousands, or if you're lucky, hundreds of thousands of users out there in the world trying your app in an endless variety of ways to reveal the little niggling details about your app that you didn't expect to go wrong. You can find out more at Crashlytics.com. And once again, it's a free download. Integrate this framework with your app and get moving with Crashlytics.
Yeah, Crashlytics is great. I use it in my app tweet library, and they're really on a roll this year, adding a bunch of different stuff. And they've improved the web interface, they've added the beta testing, and now just this week they're launching a new analytics part of Crashlytics called Answers. And so, you know, every app has crashes, like you said, but let's say you're bug-free. Let's say you have no bugs. You log into Crashlytics and it's like nothing. It's blank. Well, they have a product for you now that still makes Crashlytics useful, because they're rolling this thing out. I haven't tried it yet, but you'll be able to see, you know, just how many people are using your app, what versions, things about your app, even if when it doesn't crash. So we'll link to the new Crashlytics Answers. It's rolling out soon. Check that out. And of course, check out the crash reporting. It's at Crashlytics.com.
Yeah, thanks again, Crashlytics, for sponsoring the show. And Manton, I love the idea. What do you get for the diligent engineer who makes no crashes. We'll get them Crashlytics with answers, because finally it's an excuse to install and use Crashlytics, even if you're sure there is absolutely nothing wrong with your app. I love this. Of course, as you mentioned, Manton, they keep adding new stuff. It seems to be the story of Crashlytics, especially this year. They are on fire over there. Crashlytics.com. Thanks again for sponsoring the show.
So, Daniel, I got an email today from app.io, and this is a service that we talked about several months back, maybe, that allows you to have these like interactive demos of your app inside a web page. And I loved this thing. I thought it was awesome. But on the show, I was doubtful that they could make this – not doubtful they could make it into business, but wondering how they could possibly give this away, because almost everybody could use this thing for free unless you had just a wildly successful app. So anyway, the email today says we're shutting down the demo part of our service, and we have this ads kind of platform that's related somehow, though I haven't looked at it in detail. I assume it's based on the same technology. And we're going with that instead. So I don't know. You saw this, I think. What's your first thought on what does this mean? Did they have to kind of pivot? Was I right? They just couldn't make this profitable, or is it they're just trying new stuff?
I don't know. it's a real shame, because regardless of the reasoning for it, they're just pulling the rug out from under everybody who embraced it and made the technology a part of their marketing campaign, right? Like, Manton, did you end up ever shipping one or publicly using one?
No, I signed up. I paid them $0, and I uploaded a simulator build, and I played with it, and I showed it to a few people, but I never got to the next step of – I wanted to do a special build of the app that allowed you to just use it without having to sign in with app.net or Flickr or anything else. I wanted to put that on app.io. I never actually got that done. If I had gotten that done, I would have totally linked and shipped it, because I just thought it was really cool technology.
Yeah, and I remember we speculated a bit on the show about like how did they achieve this from an engineering point of view. And we were like, oh, I guess it's like a I think we found evidence that it was like a VNC type thing, like it's screen sharing to like a simulator build of your app running on app.io's servers. And I think that was part of what was making you go like, huh, like how do they get this thing to scale?
Right. I guess it obviously it costs money to run it, but like I didn't pay them any money, and I assume a lot of people didn't. And that's the freemium thing, right? You know, only 1% pay you or something, but there's just a pretty big cost in running this, I think.
Well, so the thing is, I haven't looked carefully what their ads thing is, but if you go to their site now, it says like your game becomes the ad. Well, that's pretty like – that's a laser-focused marketing. They're sort of makes it sound like they're mainly planning literally on just games using this service. But it sounds like what they're saying is that they're going to have ads where people get linked right to a playable version of your game. And then maybe they choose to buy it, right? But this is what that tells me is that means they still have their whole infrastructure set up, and they still have copies of Xcode with copies of the simulator running on Macs and serving out, you know, instances of this.
Yeah, they've got the technology there, which is great. I'd hate for them to scrap that because it was just very cool. So they have that, but they're changing a little bit to be more about advertising between apps, perhaps, and not so much I just link to a better interactive screencast.
Right, and you know, it was freemium before, so you could do a free version, but it was they had a tier system where at some point you did have to pay. And I think now about like folks who have been let down by this, like I didn't get the email because I'm not using their service. I haven't signed up for it. So I learned about it when I saw Cable from Panic, his tweet kind of lamenting the fact that they had put a lot of work into making their interactive demo for Diet Coda, and they're going to have to take that down now. They don't have – there's no like – there's no plan B. You know, there's no, oh, this is too bad. Now we – you know, this company wasn't working at that price model, so we're going to have to pay them $1,000 more a month or something. There's no option there. And yet, you know, I can't, come on. I'm a big boy. I can take it. App.io can stop selling their service at any time. However, it's not good publicity for them to have this great technology and to have really, you know, kind of like high profile customers like Panic on board celebrating them and then say, you know what? thanks for all your support. We're just gonna help market iOS games now, and you're out of here.
Yeah, and especially after Panic did put so much work into, like I mentioned that I hadn't actually shipped it because I wanted to put a little bit of work into a custom version. They put a lot of work into it. You know, an example site, like you said, the voiceover, you know, guiding people through how to use the app. They probably spent weeks potentially on preparing it. And now, as of in a couple months, it's going to be offline.
So maybe now, you know, it's funny that I had this like instinct from day one to say, I think part of what we had the debate about was I was like, oh, well, we should just like, you know, someone should just like put something together, like an open source version of this.
And you're
like,
right.
You're like, oh, that's hard, Daniel. That takes work and servers. And, you know, yeah, no, that's easy. I'm Daniel. I know everything. And then, but I was able to visualize, at least in my head, the parts that would go into this. And yeah, mm-hmm. you're right. It's non-trivial. And yeah, it probably does take, you know, some significant server cost. But man, if that open source product existed right now, I can tell you one company that would probably be jumping onto it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're totally right. If you could self-host even kind of a simpler version of this somehow, you know, folks like Panic would love to switch to it. I'm sure. I there's more than them too. I mean, I can't remember the names now, but I want to say I saw at least three or four people just kind of, you know, in the community of folks that, you know, we know from online or whatnot that were using this publicly and linking to it.
Yeah.
So all those folks are, yeah, would maybe, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say what was the, you know, conversion rate kind of on this stuff. Like,
yeah.
You know, was it significantly better? Did Panic sell significantly more copies of Coda because of this? I have no idea. They probably have at least some idea, but there's certainly value there. And it's worth keeping that stuff around if they could.
And maybe the fact that we can only think barely of 3 to 4 fellow developers who have publicly embraced it says something about the number of people who they're actually going to disappoint with this shutdown.
Perhaps. And like you said, I mean, we're not entitled to anything, especially people like me who didn't pay them a dime. I mean, I don't really have any reason to complain. But I have a little bit of regret about the whole thing. That I wish I had seen a alternate universe in which it wasn't free and they charged, you know, even just like $10 a month for the basic plan with several higher than that or something. I wish I couldn't see how that would have played out over the six months, and maybe they would have been able to keep that product around.
And I think maybe I'd like to see the alternate universe where this fundamental technology is based on something like open source that lets you achieve this like totally not dressed up version of, you know, running a simulator over VNC.
Well, you talk about then, the goodwill and you know, just like this, there's a negative response to this. Like everyone is going to distrust the company a little bit more. They could immediately reverse that by open sourcing a couple key parts of their engine and still keeping their ads platform and whatnot. I don't know if that's viable, but if they did that, everyone would have a very positive opinion about the turnaround.
Right. And it would be for the people, all the people who loved using the technology, but obviously their use case was not profitable for app.io. They could continue self-hosting, use the technology, and probably say great things about app.io as they continue to use that. You know, it'd be like powered by app.io's open source magic. Maybe we can hope for something like that. We'll see how this plays out and see whether app.io takes a negative backlash from a significant number of people. But in the short term, it is a shame that this technology that both Manton and I really were – this was one of those that was up there, Manton, with like, I don't think that's possible. And then you see it and you're like, oh, that is possible and this is why. And then when you put all the pieces together of the technology, it starts to make sense why it's possible. But it's one of those great products because it challenges just the description of it. You know, you can run your iOS app to anybody in a standard browser. Just still sounds nuts to say it.
Yep. And it's been out for a long time, and I don't think anyone has tried to match it, really. No one's taken your challenge of trying to build this themselves. So it's a very cool, you know, kind of step forward for demoing stuff.
So everybody consider the challenge laid down. I don't know. Consider that relayed. I think that we have some smart listeners, and I bet there's somebody out there who would like to take a crack at this and get something, even if it's like prototypical up on GitHub. Show us how you can let somebody submit an IPA, IPA. And
I've never heard someone pronounce it like that before.
Me neither. It's the first time for everything. And then run it in a web page. I'd like to see that. And then I'd like the source code, please. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that would be great. And of course, Apple is rolling out finally screencasts, you know, videos inside the App Store. And I think that it's not as cool as what app.io has done, but it's halfway there. It's also a nice step forward. Not a technology step forward, but yeah. A big bonus for people selling apps.
Well, it's funny. We lament sometimes when Apple buys some third-party service like Test Flight. Oh, we're gonna lose all this fancy stuff. But in this case, it's like Apple buying app.io would have been undoubtedly better for everybody involved. Because like if you don't happen to be a game developer who wants to make ads that are playable, then it sounds like you're sort of being left out of the whole app.io transition. So surely whatever somebody like Apple would have done with it, having acquired it, would have been at least more cause for hope than this.
Yeah, probably so. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening to the show this week. Good talking to you, Daniel, as always. And, you know, everyone check out the jobs board again, jobs.corent.org. We've got some new stuff on there, both Mac and iOS developers. Just check that out if you're looking for a job or want to hire someone.
Yeah, Manton. I mean, I've been impressed recently. Just in the past week, I think we've had these three new listings from brand name companies. So this is great for folks who are looking for a job where you want to be able to say to your friends and family, hey, you know that cool service you use? I worked on the app. So we got iOS developers being sought by Dictionary.com, Urban Spoon, and DocuSign. I actually used DocuSign recently when I was making my home purchase. So lots of great stuff there. And you can learn more at jobs.corient.org. Manton, until next week, I'm going to be looking forward to some of those Swift email responses we get. And I think you and I need to draw straws and decide which one of us is going to be pro Swift and which one of us is going to be pro Objective-C, because we need to get a fight going on here. And it's been a long time since you and I had a good one.
Yeah, I don't know which side I want to take. I'll have to play with it a little more.
Yeah, me neither. But we'll work on that. And folks, thanks for listening. As always, Manton, I will see you next week.
Bye.